Hello, this is Daryl War.
So this is on the order of another sickie podcast with a lot of spoilers for actual episodes that I am creating as time moves on.
And I think it's going to help. And I feel like with the Alma Mater's podcast, I didn't really get you on the up and up with the work, but I've also just had the jitters just from, we've really all been through such a traumatic experience with the social media. Some people haven't, which is great, because there are some people who don't use the internet that much, believe it or not. So, kudos to them. But I have, I think, a simple cold now. But I've also just got the jitters, because yeah, it is really stressful. I get worried, because it made me so absolutely wacko, everything that was going on, that I would wake up in the morning and go, did I do anything crazy last night? And even now, when it's really nothing, I check my browser history. No, you were doing good. But the anxiety is still there just because it was a repeating factor for years. I don't know if anybody else is having similar effects like that. Keeping in touch with some of the younger pen pals and that kind of thing, just letting them know. They're worried that there's going to be something bigger, something that's either social media or something that's worse. And I say, you know, the best thing that I think can happen right now is if some of these social media sites go back to being as good as they were in 2008, before the like click showed up and before all the casino style things were implemented to intentionally make it addictive, because there were really big gains. A lot of good friends did get back in touch, and in some cases still do. But there is a lot of damage. We can't deny that there is a lot of damage. And one video that I did notice from Absolute Motivation was great, because a lot of the tech wizards coming out saying, hey, something's up. One gentleman was talking about how there's an age limit on certain things that are addictive that give a dopamine rush, such as alcohol and gambling and that kind of thing. It's an age limit. And I thought, yeah, exactly. And, you know, but we got kids like growing up on this. And then another pen pal sent me something else. And oh my gosh, some of the stuff on some of those videos, you know, I was just thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I'm trying to create clean content that's informative and educational, get your brain functioning real well. And then there are these videos out there. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's all of this scary kind of pornographic garbage. And I remember telling somebody, I think one of the annoyances that people had with Margaret Chazette Dupre is that wasn't vulgar enough. Is there really? There was no vulgarity. It's very deep and heartfelt, and the love that happens in the consensual adult way. You know, it's very rich and very loving. I mean, it's just like a whole lot of love letters. So it's, you know, nothing gruesome, no vulgar word usage. I think it was just people got so used to pornographic content. Oh my gosh. One thing that a lot of this reminds me of, I remember an interview, late night interview, years and years ago, with Dick Van Dyke. And somebody was asking him about censorship. And he says, it has to happen here and there. I don't think it's healthy, he said. I don't think it's healthy. But we've done it before. You know, and he mentioned like things that were done before. But basically saying, yeah, people need to look out for themselves and there needs to be guidance among each other and that kind of thing. But the main thing I remember him saying is that it comes because it has to, but he felt that it wasn't healthy, censorship itself. Anyway, so yeah, I want to talk because I got the stress, and if you got the stress, I'll let you know that I'm with you, because what happened, what I see happened and is happening, they brought in the advertisers. The advertisers are incredibly competitive. And us being surrounded by that on a communication and information machine, a network, bringing in that competition made us nutty. I mean, other than those techniques that were used to make a lot of this technology addictive, just been taking its toll on a lot of us. And I remember years ago, too, somebody was talking about, oh, your competition. And I'm all, I don't want competition. I just want people who want what I'm doing. That's all I want. You know, I'm not looking to compete. But people got that idea, because most of the time I was just like, okay, I'll do the advertising here. I'll do the advertising there. Try to get people's attention. Whatever, because I was just surrounded by, that's what you have to do to get some talk out of people. But that was not the case. It was just that everybody was getting distracted. But yeah, I don't like the competition. I feel that we should be allowed to make our own choices. It's one of the reasons that we
work so hard as a society to get freedom of choice because there was a lot of people forced to do things they didn't want to do, or levels of slavery, basically. And to get past that, having freedom of choice, and then understanding all those things and making sure that all our critter ways, our baser primate instincts could get tempered down and settled and to live peacefully. And that's why some people who are very, very comfortable, they want conflict in their entertainment because they don't have any in their lives. They need some excitement. They need some action. But for those of us that do have stress in our lives, or we just have anxiety about a lot of stuff, we need things that are relaxing. We really do. Just also to let you know, that some of that competitive spirit, it was coming out because we were surrounded by big business competitors. If you can digest that, I hope it'll help. Helps me. So like I said, you know, I was shooting for 25 people. I really was. I did not. I saw those numbers. And for years, I heard people, you know, we went to go see the movie, the Burton film, 2012. And also, along the way, while I was creating the pit, well, you know, Dark Shadows fandom isn't that big. And I'm like, and at this level, I'm like, not even. It is more vast than I could have ever imagined. So I think that was part of it, just because people really were like, oh, anything. And I think part of that, too, other than, you know, just loving the character so much for some of us, but for other people, like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen? You know, you just kind of get caught up in the next, and always wanting more. I think that's part of it. But the other part was it did have such a big influence on these kids from the 60s. And it was hard to obtain. And for some people, it still is, the entirety of it. Super hungry, starving fans. There's that aspect. But hopefully that's going to chill out as the series is becoming more and more available in more and more places. I know a lot of streaming sources only tends to have it like a chunk, but hopefully we'll just get more libraries and more rentals and that kind of thing for people who can't afford the whole kit and caboodle. So we're just talking about social media. And also, I had another pen pal who was like, oh, what is this about the reluctant vampire? And I was like, I talk about it in Alma Matters. So I had to go through a bit more of that with her, which was good, because she was just like, this sounds really fascinating. I'm always, it's a very deep concept. I don't think it used to be. I think it used to just be a little bit more well-known, because it is a bit of a, somewhere between high school and college level understanding of thinking, at least what I remember high school and college being. Yeah. Here things a little simpler now, but anyway. And yeah, the reflection of ourselves, the understanding of being a life that feeds off of other life, and having difficulty handling the facts of the inevitable. Something has to perish in order for another being to sustain and be healthy. And also, I talked to her about the curse with Barnabas being quite a match, considering, with Angelique and having the lust thing there. And so the curse to be a vampire, it's like even more so that somebody was unfortunately given physical love for the sake that there was no emotional love between them. You know, on her end, it got obsessive. And on his end, he was very, I'm sorry, and it really, I didn't think I was going to see you again. But it kind of fits in with the reluctant vampire, too. Life feeding off life, we're preying on each other, that kind of thing. But she wanted to know more, and I was thinking that, yeah, what I see through my journey with Barnabas and Josette, reaching for something more pure, and that would be Josette, and that's probably a reason that cranky people don't like Josette. Because they want much feistier. She could be feisty. You know, you look at her kitty incarnation. She got feisty. But yeah, I think that was just the reaching towards how we wish we could be something more than a life that feeds off of other life. More than animal, I guess. So I don't want to expand too much on that because I'm still working it out and I have better words for that. And there are other things I wanted to talk about with you guys. You know, I was listening to Alma Mater, so I'm like, oh, I don't think I gave them quite enough about what's going on. Now, last night, I was doing all the noise cleaning for all the voices for 19. So, yeah, we got the demo done. And there were so many darn characters. But I was just going through all those tracks of the voices. hopefully I have done a better Hope Lange, Mrs. Muirhorn. I'll have to go through some of that dialogue. I was worried it was a little too highfalutin, but then I thought, Miss Muir is a writer. She can talk that way. It's okay. Now, let's see. So, yeah, I went through all the tracks for 19, and I'm just opening up things. I'm looking at summaries for episodes of Dark Shadows for the Turn of the Screw and Werewolf. I think I wrote in one of my notes, Turn of the Werewolf, because they put both components in there in the soap opera. But the way that the pit levels itself is that there are all these other components going on with all the other characters integrating with all the other shows. So it has that life of its own while integrating original material, the linear aspect that Dark Shadows has. So going through Dark Shadows chronology, that's why it's good to blend it with situation comedies and other shows and movies that don't require as much chronological focus. There are issues of continuities with those shows as well, but not nearly as much as with soap opera. I hope that all y'all are kind of enjoying that this is getting a little more intellectual, that I'm actually talking about the work and not about all these hazards we're having and all the stress. So, yeah, 19 Happy Hour in Hell, definitely a Roger and Carolyn thing. I sent some of that dialogue to a couple friends, and I was on the phone with Oshin. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm just doing a lot of stuff. I want to get back to you. But that it was good. I was just like, it's just a fact check. That's all I'm looking for, is just a fact check that it works, that I got those components right from the House of Dark Shadows. I probably don't need to change anything, but she was thinking feedback. I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, that would be great, because I gave you a piece. But it was more just like, did I get it right? Does this work? You know, and also some of the stuff Roger's saying to Carolyn, because Carolyn and Roger in episode 19, there are touching on Victoria Winters potentially being part of the family. And of course, Roger, because this is a nicer Roger. This is definitely not first year Roger, which I knew he was often the villain in the first year. And that was something that me and Oshie talked about too. I said, man, you got him. I mean, you started early, so you're getting a pain in the ass Roger. Whereas I got one that was already half quieted down and kicked back. So all I had to do was give him a good book. That's all I had to do. So he's very kickback about it with Carolyn. Well, you know, coming up with fun ideas. Well, if she is, let's have fun with it. If Victoria's your sister and she's part of the family, why don't we just have fun with it? That's part of that. And let's see what else. Yeah, I really want to. Oh my gosh. I was getting so nostalgic over Kids in the Hall last night, just thinking, yeah, that's where I come from. Clue the movie, childhood, but in my teens, Kids in the Hall, yeah, that was where it was at. And sometimes it got too much for me. I'm like, oh, you know, like, I'm very touch and go with those boys. There are some characters I am not fond of that they do, but a lot of the other ones. Let's see that, you know me, slice of life. That's why Fran is one of my favorites. And I think Mark McKinney played, you know, one of the elder ladies too, you know, kind of here or there. So yeah, just looking at Milligan and Hecubus thinking, oh my gosh, how much further can I take Kids in the Hall jokes? Well, it'll be fun, because I noticed that I was dropping a few here and there with other characters that Dave Foley played, dropping little things. So then, back to Maggie and Sam, like I said, back on the road podcast, the Sam and Maggie Salva show, sometimes these season two episodes, it is like that. So they're talking, and Maggie's, you know, making sure Mr. Wells is okay, and it's like, well, what was that noise, and could it have been Chris, you know, this growling upstairs, and trying to figure that out. I'm not sure how quickly there'll be the werewolf reveal for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows that Chris Jennings is a werewolf, because a lot of us Dark Shadows fans, we know that's what the deal is. Show's 50 years old. Happened ages ago. If you don't know it, you might as well know now. Yeah, that's who that is. And they let the audience know pretty quick anyway. It was just everybody else that didn't know. But having everybody else know, or enough people who know, and so Sam and Maggie are trying to figure that out, too, and also just saying, well, what's going on with the boys at the old house? And, you know, they're fine. And what happened with Captain Greg and going to the Stevens home? And just working that out, too, because with 18, it does, you know, it does come up. There will be the Greg and Endora scene that y'all been waiting for. So we got Sam and Maggie, and they're basically talking. And then we've got Samantha and Endora. And they're just trying to go, okay. And Dora pops in, and it's like, well, let's work on this. And it very much is, how do we figure this out? Now, I am so grateful that I made that intro to episode 2, because that's where I listed all of those things anyway from 1795 that happened that Angelique was responsible for. because that helped me reinvent this list for Samantha and Endora. That's what they have to go through. It's like, oh, let's take a look-see. And I found out, no crystal ball. Or I'm trying to figure out how the witchcraft is going to be in blending the two from the two shows, because there's different methods and stuff. And there are a few tricks up Lily Munster's sleeve, too, just because of what Grandpa could possibly have handed down with his basket of tricks and all that. I try to stick to what could possibly happen in these shows, but there is a little bit of taking liberties, which people do a lot more in fanfiction. I try to be as close to the originals as I can, because I find that very grounding to what am I allowed to do, only given so many options. So there's only some liberties, you know, where I kind of stretch the rules a little bit. Such as with Wadsworth drinking in episode 14. I've never seen him drink in Clue. I don't remember that at all, but I figured that would be possible. And he still kind of kept it together. Just saying, don't let me drive. So, yeah, they have to go through, gosh, this is like watching a soap opera, and just go through the list. And Samantha really does. She's like, I've got to write this down. There are so many things that this lady's done that we can't memorize at all. And Dora agrees, and they just go back and forth. And Dora is really just like, oh my gosh, the girl is just cuckoo. And why? What was the purpose? How come? Because she hasn't quite adapted. I had something for a future where Endora starts to figure out how Angelique really became that way. I'm not really sure if I'm going to touch on the Miranda Duval stuff at all. That was at that point where it stretches out a little further than I might want to go. So I will keep within some boundaries according to not so much later Dark Shadows, but more, like I said, between the 300s. I mean, I'm adding first year too, information for first year, but up to about 900, I think, for Dark Shadows, just like somewhere in the 900s. I haven't pieced this together for this particular podcast, so I'm just giving you a basic idea. But Endora, that was the reason I mentioned it. The plans for her is that she's got to initially hear in episode 19, she's saying, why? What was the purpose? What was the deal? She's more crazy about a mortal man than you could ever be, you know, to Samantha. Like, why? You know, she doesn't get it. And so somewhere along the way, the big plan is that Endora will start understanding, like, what's going on with Angelique. And possibly this is something where Mother did raise her very well. Or something else. Just not getting the care. Which, you know, says a lot for a lot of us who we're going through. You know, we can actually identify a bit with Angelique. Because if you can't figure out how love works, and works in a way where you care about the person, that's how love really works exceptionally well, is that you care about the person's happiness. You want that person for yourself. And if it's mutual, it's the same. But you do care about that person's well-being and their happiness. And you can't have them to yourself all the time. And there is a desire for the person, which is somewhat possessive. But there's also a desire to have them well cared for and getting their needs met and that kind of thing. And that is the part quite a few of us don't understand, and Angelique especially doesn't understand. And that's why you notice in the novel, because I've reached her over in the novel that far, to where she's telling Barnabas, I know that I love you now because I saw you happy and it made me happy. That's that big thing where they can be friends because she reached that far. Which I don't know if that got any magic going for people reading that. So at this stage, Endora's just trying to figure out what the heck's wrong. Just like, nobody goes this far out for no reason. So as they're figuring that out, just listing all this stuff, this is just outrageous how she could just get this far out of hand. So they're like, well, let's look at where she is now. So there's Angelique. She's doing the incantation, and that was used. But at this point, she's like floating off into, we're not sure. There's some kind of void that she's sort of stuck in. So she's using this incantation instead to reach Diablos from whatever void that Beetlejuice put her in to get rid of her. It could be Lost Souls Room, like in the Beetlejuice movie, or it could be somewhere else, just giving you an idea of where we're headed. And then Angelique gets there, and Diablos says it's happy hour. That kind of stuff. That should be fun, and just try to figure that out. I got multiple votes from friends about throwing in a Harry Potter joke, so I'm not going to tell you what it is. Well, that'll just wet your whistle. Yeah, Mum voted for it, Lisa voted for it, another friend voted for it. I'm sure there were about two or three more people voting for it when I told him about it. Oh yeah, I'm calling, probably Elena too. Just like, what do you think? But for sure, I know Mom, Lisa, and another friend, just somebody to call on the phone. So yeah, we got to get that. And then she's basically tattling. Nicholas was totally incompetent. He's like, all right, I'll get Nicholas down here. Which is going to be interesting because in the original Dark Shadows, Nicholas Blair, there was a lot of, I mean, he got far with his evil to the point where Hoffman and Barnabas really knew who this guy was. A lot of people knew who he was. And Victoria was going after him too. Before, it's like, don't you fool with my friend Maggie, man. I'm not afraid of you. You're evil. Victoria was going at it. It was awesome. See her going after Nicholas Blair. But in the case of the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, they don't really know. They'll probably have to be updated and whatnot because he's kind of been bumbling, Nicholas Blair has. So, and that's one of the reasons that he's getting in trouble. So he just didn't do it very well. He didn't do a good job. One thing that was nice, original Dark Shadows, is that because in the original, he was going after Maggie when they were going to get married. And when he got taken away then, in the original, Hoffman goes to tell Maggie, and Maggie's like, oh, weird, you know, like, he left, and I turned him down, and I've forgotten everything, and because that obviously didn't happen, he just kind of melted, and she just didn't remember what had happened. So Hoffman makes up a story to go tell Maggie, like, well, yeah, it's a, you had a traumatic experience, you know, saying no to this guy, and how do you feel? And Maggie says, I feel relieved. It's strange. And she's ready to pick up and carry on. Oh, somebody's calling for you, Dr. Hoffman. Oh, you're going to the Great House? I'll go with you. She's ready. She's on the go again. I was going to get married, and now I'm relieved that I'm not, and off we go. But for the Pit, it's just Nicholas been incompetent. He's just been getting thwarted left and right. Too many people are showing up to help out and get in his way. So I couldn't get very far. That's why we have no Eve in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. And then with what Diabolus is bringing down Nicholas for, it gets, again, very silly. But even so, they totally buy it. They totally believe that they're evil, they're powerful, and all these things. They totally believe it. So by that time, you know, when Nicholas has given him a punishment, and Dora and Samantha are just like, oh my gosh, this is just surreal. Just, how are we gonna get the girl out of that? My gosh, I mean, what a horrible crowd to be mixed up with. You know, that's all they're thinking, that she just, you know, we left her to the riffraff and look what happened. It just got worse and worse and worse. What my memory was actually correct, but I wanted to consult with others about it, and I found out, yeah, in the original, she does not come back until the time travel to 1897. Now, the thing about Endora and Samantha from Bewitched, they can time travel. It's not always a good idea, but they do it, or they bring people from the past. So what they decide is, let's look ahead for Angelique's future, because she's out of the picture now. Too many good guys have come about, and Samantha is saying, yeah, the Collins were very wise to bring in so much help from elsewhere, and that's why they contacted us, and we should go along with this. It's a good idea, because, yeah, I mean, look at this mess. And of course, Endora says, well, I'm glad that Captain Greg brought this to my attention. I need a project. And we all know Endora does need a project. So they decide, okay, well, for her, let's look ahead for Angelique's future. And it makes a lot of sense. Now, that's what the wonderful thing about how all this is working out. 1897, we were so floored watching a lot of that. There are components of that where Angelique does have these heroic elements. She's still like, I want Barnabas. But and getting all wacky about that. But for one thing, it was great seeing her go against Laura. It was wonderful. We were like actually cheering Angelique. I was like, I can't believe this. This is actually turning out good. You know, maybe she'll come around. And then I thought, yeah, Angelique Quentin, just because there seems to be all these similarities. And then I see Quentin make moves on her. He'll make the moves on almost any, you know, female person who breathes. But still, that was nice. And I was shocked, and I demanded it be turned back so I could see it, because I had the idea earlier. And then she really wants him. Later on, she really wants Quentin. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this could cure everything. Everything. So 1897 seems to be where Angelique shines her brightest. And that would be the best time to catch her for Endora and possibly Samantha a little bit here and there. And say, okay, you are moving in the right direction. We keep you in the right direction. And that's why some of that novel turns out the way that it did. Because I had already planned that stuff ahead of time. Just seeing it, you know, you get that idea. And other people, you know, they've told me, oh, Shane and Lisa, it's like, yeah, I have all this stuff planned for the future. Some of it I've written, but I need to connect everything. And I work the same way. So that is what we got for the girls. And more girls. There's a lot of creamy Carolyn coming up. Just Carolyn and Carolyn. So that initial discussion at the beginning of Happy Over in Hell with Roger and Carolyn was, oh, you got this letter from Schooner Bay. You got this letter from Gull Cottage. And it's like, oh, well, I need to go see Mrs. Muir because I guess Mother, Carolyn's daughter's mother, got in touch. Because I did think that, okay, you know, I'm trying to condense this. It is really quick. So maybe just something. And that would be a good excuse for her to go see your friend, Mrs. Muir. So a little help getting Carolyn there. You know, Roger, at the beginning, you know, like, do you need the car? Or a car? Because I'm sure they got more than one. And so, yeah, Carolyn's going out there on her own. I will try to get Tony back in here. So don't y'all worry if you love that pair. I do. So a little bit of help from Captain Greg as she's trying to find where the Gull Cottage is. And a little bit of Martha. Martha out the door, go get the kids from school. I figured that was possible. Or go to get them from somewhere. Just some reason that Martha's going out the door. So I made something up. And so then, yeah, Mrs. Muir and Carolyn just shooting the breeze and talking about Elizabeth coming to see Mrs. Muir. And of course, she's tripping, you know, Mrs. Muir, Carolyn Muir's tripping. Not physically tripping, but, you know, just tripping out that this regal woman came to see me from a mansion. Because I think that's a little bit of what we kind of admire with Elizabeth's daughter. She does have that regal quality. And just trying to say, yeah, it's very possible. She understands. It was great working with Mrs. Muir that way because I understood that she would see a lot of the things that I would see. As far as, you know, somebody having a premarital affair and being all worried about that. And she doesn't know who Victoria is. But Mrs. Muir knew, just like me, the name Victoria comes up for babies in times of war. It comes up a lot. Victor or Victoria as victory. You know, that's why it does. And that was the thing that really got me. And one of my new favorite fan fiction writers, somebody put in a couple stories that was filling gaps. They saw the same thing. And I was really glad of that. Yeah. Somebody who was a soldier. And that would be likely with wartime and all that. So that was nice. And the time period's pretty good for Victoria's age. Could fit. They keep everything a little vague on Dark Shadows. So you can bend a little bit here and there, you know, just a little bit. Don't do too much. It's one of those things. And they kind of touch on the Carolyn and Carolyn stuff too, which was very sweet to me. And one of the reasons that would make sense for Elizabeth to come out and tell Mrs. Muir about it. And also another thing I wanted to make sure, because we don't have the premature burial with Elizabeth Stoddard, because basically, I mean, a lot of that stuff happened where she would have an ailment or something, or she'd be buried alive or whatever. A lot of that was because Joan Bennett wanted time off. That was in her contract. So they would make up this stuff where Elizabeth was just gone. So, you know, whenever some horrifying thing stops happening to Elizabeth Stoddard, you go, okay, Joan Bennett came back from vacation. And that's pretty much the deal there. But in this instance, with the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, I don't worry about that. What did O'Shane say in her interview? You know, it's like, I don't have to worry about paying more than 5 actors so I can have more people in it. Let's see. But because of the premature burial that happened in Dark Shadows, that gave Carolyn a way to have this. I mean, she missed her mother dearly. You know, she thought that Elizabeth was dead, but that gave her this growth where she had to be in charge. She had to take a lot of charge. And I feel like Elizabeth being gone on this trip, it's going to help do the same thing. And Mrs. Muir is basically telling Carolyn Stoddard that, and also saying, well, that's what your mother told me too, that you are pretty much in charge. Your Uncle Roger can only go so far. So you are in charge, honey. It's not just Cousin Barnabas. It's not just Uncle Roger. You are also in charge of that house and that estate. And I should probably have something that comes up, you know, that there could be something else that Carolyn could be given. Just show, yeah, that is true. That she is one of the adults now. And then we have another ship scene, starting with Lily and Elizabeth, and then with Bill a little bit. Didn't go too far with that, just for the sake of time, but that'll keep us going. Just have a little scene, a little scene, a little scene, because it's a huge boat journey. So we'll just keep getting more of Bill and Liz. And I made this one kind of romantic, just expressing, you know, how Elizabeth did have feelings for Bill, and to Bill to be kind of gratified finding that out. Also just, you know, understanding of what Elizabeth went through. There's no reason for Bill to be like, well, hopefully in the next scene, not in 19, but another one, he'll be able to tell Elizabeth how he died. And that should be interesting. I just have to get the facts straight for that.
And that about wraps it up. Now, Amy will... Oh, I know that the lady who played Amy as a little girl, Denise Nickerson, I think her name is. I heard she was in a bad way. So, yeah, it's one of the things, like, try to get, you know, do something to give tribute to a lot of these people who have just entertained us so well. So I do not know how she's doing now, but it was kind of getting me a little bit quicker on performing Amy. I mean, I've already performed her for 18. It's done. It's not out there, but it is done. So I don't know how she's doing, but, you know, I've been worried. I know a lot of people have been worried. Because I knew her from the Willy Wonka, the Gene Wilder one. And that's really the only one I watch. I don't watch the other one. But, yeah, gum chewer. And I even had plans that maybe she'd chew some gum in a bit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Because when we were watching, we kept making jokes about that. I was like, oh, gum chewer. She's got it behind her ear. So that is, I noticed, yeah, I was still able to incorporate these linear things from Dark Shadows. Rather than Elizabeth finding Amy in the woods, hearing growling, oh, what's that? It'd be Carolyn instead. And she's already out there anyway. She's coming home from Gull Cottage. She's coming home from Scooter Bay. So it fit in so well. You know, I'm so glad to be back on the road doing this stuff and be able to tell you guys about it, too. And there was a House of Dark Shadows joke. So in the All Due Respect list for episode 19, Happy Hour in Hell, House of Dark Shadows is in there, too. Which, by the way, with 17, the 2012 film got thanked because quite a bit of the Angelique Beetlejuice fight scene, there were components from the fight scene in the 2012 film. So you had that very much, you know, with Beetlejuice, that is Burton. So it made a lot of sense to incorporate a few things from this other Burton work that is Dark Shadows. So that's why the 2012 was in the All Due Respect list for episode 17, A Bioexorcist Comes to Collinsport. That's why that's there, because I was lifting things from that movie for the fight scene. And you might have noticed that, too. And it was crazy, too, because when I did that for episode 17, trying to get a copy of the darn movie, because I couldn't find mine, so now I have two. And I looked in the movie, you know, when Angelique does the Pearl, whatever, the Exorcist or whatever kind of thing, there were beetles in the spew. When you looked at the ground, there were beetles there. And I was like, oh my gosh. It almost felt like a nod to Beetlejuice anyway. And that's why he found it. He's like, oh, look, beetles in the episode 17. There was that. So with 19, House of Dark Shadows is going to get in the All Due Respect list. Now, I'm also going to talk to you about 20. If I could get a breath. I don't know if this is allergies or cold, but results are the same. So with 20, it does kind of fall in where we pick up, you know, with Dark Shadows there, where it's Carolyn bringing Amy in, Hoffman's there, and, oh, a runaway and that kind of thing. Similar stuff to the original, just trying to piece it together. I have the Peter and Gomez stuff here. I'm not sure if it's going to be in 20, but it's just been really difficult to try and pick up all the stuff from, oh, so I guess we're working from 638, DS 638 to 698. I think we're working on that. Just trying to layer everything in how it's going to work. Not always in the exact sequence as on the original, but blending in the pattern. It's been really difficult because, like I said, there is so much more content when Chris Jennings and Amy enter the picture. There's just so much more going on per episode in Dark Shadows. And I remember that when I was first viewing it. And I mentioned that in the first intro, too. So that's why it feels like it goes faster, because there's just so much more content. I mean, you got, in Dark Shadows, you don't even have to have an introduction with Maggie and Chris saying, oh, hey, great to see you. You don't even get that. They go straight and you get it in the context because they throw right in Maggie's upset with Chris for abandoning Amy or possibly doing that in the future. So with that context, you know that they already know each other. You just know because they just throw you right in. There's a little more introduction with Carolyn and Chris in the original, but with Maggie and Chris, it's direct. You know they know each other because they're already having an argument about what's going on. They do not need to be introduced. So I'm not sure if that's going to be in 20 because there's a lot of stuff with Amy and David. Now, knowing that Amy was coming in to be a friend for David, because originally I was like, well, Sarah can come back. And that can be a friend for David for a while when I didn't expect to go this far with this. So I anticipated that And I realized that one thing that would be important is having Sarah understand that David makes friends with mortal children and that she might get in the way for that element of his upbringing and that kind of thing. So who would she talk to about that? If you remember episode 10, The Kids Are All Right, she mentioned to Maggie that she had talked to a sea captain. So I managed to come up with something for presumably episode 20 here, where Sarah is by the cliffs just kind of sitting alone, and Greg finds her, you know, Captain Greg finds her, and they just discuss it. And I really love it. I really, you know, I had not had a scene with the two. I had just left the element that they knew each other too. There's also something where Bill kind of knows who he is too, because there's something in another episode of either 18 or 19. I think it's 18, where Elizabeth says blasted for some reason. And Bill says, that sounds like another ghost I uncorked along my way. And I remember somebody out there, I think he was from Hawaii, you know, in my online travels. He was really interested in Bill Malloy and Captain Greg knowing each other. And I think all he did was check out episode 4, though I think he kind of disappeared. Yeah. So I am putting that together. And there's that also in the novel, too, where they know each other, but it hasn't quite merged yet. But with Sarah and Greg, definitely ghosts working together in somewhat close proximity. And I do like that. I mentioned in another podcast sometimes where the actress for Sarah is looking at the camera because she's a little self-conscious about being on camera, you know, just making sure that she's doing all right. That for me, story-wise, when she's looking off, she's looking at the ghost of Captain Greg, who no one else could see, for approval. It just helps. When I think of that, I think it's very sweet. So yeah, I gave that a go. I can't remember when I put this together. It was somewhat recently, within the last month or two, and I am just really happy with it. Because if you remember from the original series, one of the things Sarah's upset about is being forgotten. And Greg puts that together. What you're really worried about is this. You're worried about being forgotten. And that bothered you when you told people, you know, everybody forgets you. Well, nobody's going to forget you. Nobody's forgotten you. And you have other friends. You've got the old house, Colin's house, your house, to dwell in again. You are welcome there. And what's really fun is that when Greg's pointing out what friends Sarah has, he says that dastardly Willie Loomis. And Sarah gets annoyed. But he's kind of trying to get her pep up, you know, anyway. That's part of that, too. Where she's like, hey, Willie's my friend. Don't you be doing that. Don't call him that. That's, you know, that's really nice to see. Could have happened on the original if it wasn't a soap opera. Or maybe it could have if it was a soap opera, but it would have been nice. In this experience, I've realized, yeah, Willie needed that kind of, because she's one of the safest children that he could be around. Because she's a ghost. So there's nothing, I mean, he can't tweak with her, you know, if he had the mind to. And on top of that, it really is this very wonderful relationship that's built in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows with Willie and the ghost of Sarah Collins. She just touches so many lives and can continue to do so if we create a relief series like this. So anyway, it is a conversation between the ghost of Sarah and the ghost of Captain Greg. And because I'm trying to get the chronology right with the two shows, he says, you'll have no more worries about your friends. Your house, Colin's house, is your home once more, just as Gull Cottage is mine. But one of the things that he is talking about is possibly some of the furniture getting taken out, like in Monkey Puzzle Tree. And Sarah's like, well, they didn't take the barometer, did they? Because I know that would be bad. Because there was that in The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. So it's great putting all of these components together and just seeing them shine to see all these original show bits that make the characters who they are. And I think that is why The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is so stimulating. Because if you've watched all these shows, and I'm pretty sure the one gentleman who got in touch with me, these are the shows that he grew up on. A lot of these. Addams Family, Munsters, Ghost of Mrs. Muir, and Dark Shadows. You know, this is all stuff that he grew up with. So I think that was one of the big blessings for him, is that it just stimulated his mind, because he's getting all of this nostalgia, because I do my best to make it as authentic to the originals as possible. And I'm sure it sparked his brain in certain ways, where it's like he's getting all of this information from being in contact with these characters he grew up with and seeing them blend. I mean, it does, for me, I only grew up with a few of the shows.
But for him, it must have been a much different experience. And that's why I clung to this, because it is very mentally stimulating. Also emotionally stimulating, too, because you're refeeding old information back and it's coming up with fresh stuff. But you have the old components and it's reminding you of that. And you go back and forth. And that's why when I got the tandem of doing the demos and listening to, oh, this is actually much better as an audio. And it was stimulating me. And I'm like, this is incredible. And I told you I had anhedonia. I was just numb as anything. I mean, anhedonia, if I got it right, because I did track down, like, what is wrong with me for years. And I wasn't sure. I didn't have a name for it. Sometimes it's like just sciatica of the emotions. And sciatica is more than numb. I mean, you just can't feel certain things. So when this started waking me up that good, you know, I'm like, this has got to be important. This has got to be just so. So there might be people who aren't talking to me just because they can't even comprehend what is happening to them from enjoying this thing so much, from seeing all these things happen in their mind, too, because it ain't visual other than, you know, the text. If you're listening to the radio drama and looking at the test, I know I said I didn't want to give away any more scripts up, you know, after 17 because I was angry that people kept calling me just a writer. I was tired of that. But I did have people approach me, just a few, enough that it got my understanding that it was good for them to listen to the audio and read the text. For some people, it's because they can't differentiate some of the voices I'm doing. They're not sure. But for other people, it's just to pay attention, to make sure that they are paying attention. Now, I have had that problem too, so I understand. Because there were books where I really did have to have the audio to read. There were just some reason I could not pay attention unless I had the audio too. And in some cases, I had to have both. So I understand. We're here to help each other and figure this out. So currently the plan is to keep on, you know, sharing the scripts. So that is about all I have for 20. I've already opened a file for 21. Definitely want to keep with the potential pattern of 13 a season. It's funny, it was just going to be 13 episodes once upon a time. Because I just thought, oh, yeah. We just only need so much for a kind of save and pop relief series, but this has gone way farther, and I'm happy that it has, and I hope that a lot of these newer podcasts you're enjoying, for the sake that they're a bit more like a TED Talk, actually just get some information to your heads. I do laugh a lot, don't I? And yeah, if that bothers you, I kind of understand. There's some talkers and entertainers out there that, you know, they do that a bit too much and it bugs me. Mine is less nervous. I'm more really tickled, like seriously tickled by a lot of this stuff that's going on. And some of it's stress too, because I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm going through so much ridiculous stuff. And I was even laughing in that, you know, May 2016. I was laughing because I was like, oh my gosh, this is so outrageously ridiculous that everybody was so messed up. I'm getting their brains all messed up. So the stress is affecting me. That's another reason I wanted to make this. And I'm working on, you know, some supplements and some activities to get me to calm down. Because, I mean, it's traumatic. It's really traumatic what's happened to all of us. And to me. I do have pen pals like, why is it so hard? You know, like, I have a few pen pals that they just write a little bit about what they're enjoying in a show. And they're like, yeah, this is easy. Why would anybody have a hard time saying a few things they like? Why? It just didn't make sense to them because they haven't been surrounded with what I've been surrounded by and what a lot of listeners got surrounded by. The effects that the social media schemes implemented at a certain date and started to get, you know, more and more and more. And that's why it doesn't work as well. When Oisin and I were on the phone earlier, she was saying, well, you know, I did get back in touch with some friends I wanted to be in touch with due to one of those things. And well, yeah, because it should go back to the way it was in 2008-ish, being more of a tool and less of a time waster. And she was saying, yeah, and that's my hope. My hope that realize that you don't have to, I mean, you shouldn't. I mean, it's breaking up the fabric of society, guys. There would be no reason. I mean, I'm sure there have been people over the years that have listened to episode one and say, it is not my cup of tea. And that's why I don't hear from them. Fine. But unfortunately, everybody's just gotten so nervous that they could try and claim, oh, it's not my cup of tea. And here are all these downloads, you know, and they don't know what to say to me because they're, you know, lying. You know, it is their cup of tea. They just don't know how to say it. That's problematic. But, you know, it's been good to get back to letter writing and stuff. It's just the human process. There are things that we need to maintain life structure and quality of life. And it's a bigger concern if the kids are not getting their needs met and the training that they need, because I was not raised well. And I had an epiphany when I finally understood that however much I tried to achieve more in life, a lot of times it was friends and relatives stopping me. As much as they nagged me to do more, there were barriers put in my way from friends and family, because they didn't know how to be direct about how to accomplish some of these things. Some of the people getting on my case, I mean, I can't believe you would even do this to anyone about not driving. It sure as hell wasn't because I didn't try, but you need a lot of training for that. So harping on people about their abilities, as far as I am aware, driving is a privilege. It is not a duty, but we've made a duty out of it somehow. And yeah, one of the reasons was improper care and upbringing for myself. There are a lot of things that I had to escape. And it is quite traumatic to get out of a lot of that, escape from a lot of those horrible problems and toxic people, find something that is absolutely wonderful to do if you can just generate enough discussion for it, and then find, oh, wow, here is a whole lot of people, for whatever reason, whether it's intentional or unintentional or them getting hoodwinked by these technology schemes, just as toxic as the people that I escaped. I mean, unbelievable. It's like, oh my gosh, it's scary, but we do realize that we're not going to be able to function very well this way. So there is that. And I got to say, I'm still very content to have reached my new escape route. And other people were having it too. I mean, there were some pen pals I wasn't in contact with very long, but I would hear things like, I have just got to do this, because they were lonely and they were disappointed. Just people that I didn't have enough in common with, but the one thing that we all had in common, some of these people who sort of drifted in and out through the pen pal sites, they were devastated that their lives had changed so much. There was one gentleman, I believe he actually was a computer technician, and he was saying the magic is gone. There's people using this equipment that really shouldn't be. And, you know, there was just this kind of sea of people that I briefly was in touch with, and they all knew. They knew that they had to find other pen pals to find the right companionship again, because they were just suffering so much. So they weren't interested in what I was doing. They just wanted someone to talk to really bad. And that was some of the people I found along the way. You know, we didn't maintain contact, but the problem was there. We all knew it.
And because social media companies could theoretically bring old friends together, nobody wanted to speak against it, of course. Also, being a user, even if you have very little idea that the techniques are basically taking advantage of certain vulnerabilities to make money.
And it does come from that preying on each other aspect that we just have. We're trying to get money out of people, get their attention. We should not all try to be like Angelique, you know? I think it's more fun to see if we can find a way to find a lovable Angelique who understands what love means. Someone we could root for. Because I think that's how a lot of us feel. We want to root for her. She bugs us so much. She's that part of ourselves that is just nasty. And we want that to change. Now, that doesn't mean Angelique gets Barnabas Collins. But she gets somebody. And yeah, I was also thinking about, you know, how important personal choice is. And finding your way, understanding who you are, finding your personal interests, finding your self-discovery, how your own personal growth directs you to getting what needs are met. It's one thing with the non-canon pairings, and Helena's interested in a lot of non-canon pairings, in a healthy way, satisfies her. And with a lot of the non-canon pairing stuff that just got pretty intense, it just got so loud. And it happens in other fandoms too, not just Dark Shadows. And gets so loud that
people who are interested in the canon ones, because that's what they saw, either in the book series or the film or the television show, whatever they were interested in, and that's what appeals to them. Well, I mean, they see all that loud behavior with the non-canon stuff. I mean, it's like you don't give them a choice anymore when you get that loud.
Yeah, that is a problem. We all should be able to pick for ourselves. And if something is not satisfying you to the point where you feel like, if I can convince somebody else, then I'll convince myself more. No, that doesn't work. Pick something else. Pick something else to do that will satisfy you. That's the real answer there. And that was quite a bit of what the Beatnik movement was about. Finding your own way. Finding what you were personally interested in that would sustain you for most of your life. The vocation or calling. Wasn't just berets and turtlenecks and jazz and poetry. That was the side of it. That was the superficial side. But that was, yeah, early 40s, 50s, I think. Early 20th century. Actually, yeah, it would make more sense if it came out of after World War II. I'm sure there was an earlier set of people like that. But it made sense for that time period because it was just after World War II. And we were trying to make sure that we did not go back into a Great Depression after World War II. So one of the things that got implemented was planned obsolescence. This still goes on today. Try to keep us from plummeting.
With planned obsolescence, one of the things that created was getting more and more stuff because it was fashionable. It's the new thing. Whether it was clothing, curtains, furniture, a car, just that fashionability. Which, of course, is quite wasteful, but that was part of what the Beatnik movement was about, was saying no to that, saying, this is just as good as it was last year. Why do we have to buy the new thing for next year? Why not just follow what we want to do? If it's new and it interests us, that's fine, but fashionability in planned obsolescence was the thing that the Beatniks were escaping, more or less. That might be a simple summary of that. But with planned obsolescence, it was trying to keep the money moving so that a Great Depression would not happen again.
Yeah, that's got to figure out a way around that, too. Recycling's good for that. You know, for planned obsolescence, you be a recycler. And that's something that we've been doing since the dawn of time, anything. Making one thing out of something else or using some refuse to do something else. Sort of like fertilizer, you know, where some elements of that, some portions of fertilizer come from.
Yeah, so choosing for yourself, you know, it is a big deal. And being able to know what you are satisfied with.
In fact, I have found out more and more people are dissatisfied with the Joe March and Lori thing that gets so irate. But one friend I got back in touch with a month or two ago, I mentioned the Joe and Lori thing to her. And she was like, oh, Little Women. She's like, oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. It just gives me a good feeling. Well, okay. And so I asked her about Joe March and how she's all, I understood where she was coming from. Like, really? Really? So yeah, I really did. And I love Little Women because it was one of the first novels that, you know, it was like a whole book that I got through. And I felt like this is what a novel is supposed to be like. Just the way that it was arranged from beginning, middle, and end and that kind of thing. So she got Joe March. She had no struggle with the Joe and Lori thing at all. It was wonderful to hear. Just talk to an old friend on the phone, find out that, yeah, she gets Joe March. She knows why she made the decisions that she did. It was wonderful. But at the same time, one of my points is, yeah, she picked a winner for herself. You got to pick for yourself. And if a show isn't doing it for you and you're dissatisfied, pick another one. There's tons to pick from. And if a non-canon pairing is making you cranky, go to something else. You know, move along. Everybody's got that access to be able to put something together. And not everybody shares what they put together, which is why I've been so upset that people were racing to me to quote-unquote critique when it was just bashing and, you know, telling somebody off, telling somebody what to do. I mean, geez, the rudeness. And once upon a time, we just shook our head and moved on, but it was everywhere at that point. I mean, just everywhere. I'm looking for help for this. And everybody's just bashing it. No, you're not doing it. I mean, I had somebody get in touch with me saying that he did not listen to it, but he pointed out all these things that were wrong with it. And here's some more advice.
even though I didn't pay attention. I mean, that's how bad it got. It sounds unbelievable, doesn't it? But that is how bad it got. Yeah, well, that's frightful. And it's not like I didn't ask for help. Remember? Episode 1? Anybody have some Rolling in the Leaves sound effects? Because I need some for episode 15? No one ever helped me with that. I specifically asked, hey, could somebody help me out with that from the beginning? If nothing else, most people heard that portion or turned it on. Maybe you mind wandered or something, but yeah, nobody ever helped me with that. No, I ask specific questions if you want to help out. You know, jump in just assuming all this stuff. But again, we've been overexposed to what is called critiquing, that is really bashing. We've been overexposed to, you know, you don't need anything. The internet, mommy internet's going to take care of everything. So, like I said, you know, if you feel bad, look at what you were surrounded by to make those choices. I mean, if everybody's saying, I mean, that's why I was so against it. I'm like, I can't get into this. And I was suffering. A lot of my social media posts, I mean, it's just me suffering, me being frustrated, me being lonely, like a lot of people were. And that is from the peer pressure of choosing to use this stuff when we don't want to. But, oh, that's the only way we can get in touch with people now. Ridiculous. Yeah, we were just completely getting creamed. And thankfully, some of the tech wizards are confessing, yeah, this is not good. This is not good. Anyway, I think I feel a bit better. Editing this is going to be a pain in the butt. But I think I've given you a ton of information for what is coming up. And hopefully it'll be therapeutic and you like a calmer Daryl War. It's not upsetting. I mean, you go listen to my old rants if you want to. I got plenty of me getting upset. But the bottom line of that is just to say this is what we were going through in those years. It's how bad it got. So I know I've mentioned the rants before, and then all of a sudden I've seen downloads for more people. And another podcaster did say, yeah, sometimes you want to hear that. Some people do. But I prefer me some calm and some slice of life and some intellectual philosophy, that kind of stuff. I still feel like I'm getting off some hard substance. Like, I still feel just renewed. Even though I'm not feeling too well physically. But emotionally, boy, yeah, big difference. You get off that stuff, take a nice breezy walk. Oh, man. I think that is about it. And Pen Pals keeping in touch, and I'm trying to do my best for anyone who's younger than me, giving them advice about what to do for themselves, not what I would do. Just finding out, find the solutions, find the answers. I don't tell them to use a search engine to go find out. Conversation, that's how a lot of this stuff works. Like when we have our friends over, Jonah and Clover, they'll use their phones. Well, to me, I think it's a little excessive, but at the same time, we're sharing conversation with the content that they're finding. So that is part of it. You don't just use it by yourself. You use it in tandem with your relationships, your friendships, in real space and real time. All right. So back on the road here. And 19, 20, 21, we'll see what goes. And hopefully you've found this insightful for how everything works. Getting it all together. Things active. And I'm behind on some of the other work just because I'm coughing and blowing and all that. All right. Keep in touch and take care.